How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our True Crime Podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there.
Did you have a good Halloween?
Yeah, we had a great Halloween. My oldest daughter brought a couple of her friends over. You know, those their special circle of friends that we trust came over for Halloween. My youngest daughter went to her friends that are in that bubble for Halloween, and I kind of feel bad. I wasn't expecting a lot of trick-or-treaters, because normally we get a ton of trick-or-treaters. Mm-hmm. I bought half the amount of candy, and it was all gone within an hour and a half.
Yep, same here. Like, I cannot, and you know what? We were talking about it today. I think it's because it was a Saturday night. Our neighborhood was banging, and it never is.
Right.
So then I felt kind of bad, because it was, like, gone. All right, Jen, I hear you got a case for us.
All right, we're just going to deep dive in it. Ready?
Deep dive. Yep.
Sandy Jeffers was born on January 4th, 1978 in Scott County, Tennessee, to Wanda and Walter Jeffers. And I believe Sandy was the youngest of six children, one boy and five girls. Could you imagine having six girls in a household?
No.
Unbelievable.
Oh, the fighting?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Walter passed away in 1984 when Sandy was very young. And then in 1998, Wanda passed away. I believe both parents kind of died of cancer. I read that somewhere, but I could never find back where I read that. So that's what I believe to be true.
We'll go with that.
Now, Sandy was a very friendly girl, but she was really quiet, shy, very reserved, unless you got to know her. She was also very studious. And when I say students, she is, I would dream to have a studious kid that was at least one-fourth as studious as Sandy is. Trust me, she was the class of 1996 valedictorian of Scott High School.
Wow.
And she got her bachelor's degree in science and sociology from East Tennessee State University in 2000. So at 25, she was set to graduate with a GPA of 4.0 from University of Tennessee with a second undergraduate degree. This one was going to be in anthropology.
I wish I was smart.
Sandy had also been awarded the Dorman Stout Junior Award. This honor is awarded to the sociology major who exhibits excellence in both sociology and the general undergraduate curriculum. Now, her college professor, Scott Beck, said that she was so quiet in class that at first he didn't even notice her, and he only started to notice her when she was getting the highest scores out of everyone in his class. Sandy also sent this professor an email about 3 weeks before her graduation stating how excited she was to get her doctorate's degree, start the program at UT for archaeology in that coming fall. So when Sandy wasn't studying for school, she worked as a bank teller at the credit union, and that's pretty much what she did to get herself through college. She was also in a relationship with a man named James. They had been together for about 5 years, so it was pretty serious. All in all, it seemed like Sandy was on track to have a seemingly perfect life. On May 5th, 2003, 5 days before Sandy was about to graduate, she gets a letter from the bank, her bank. It was an overdraft statement. Now, see, if it was me, I'd just kind of chuck it because I used to get a lot of overdraft statements.
They're not
bounce those checks.
They're not letters telling you what a great customer you are and we love you and come back, right?
Oh, no. There was never like, dear Mrs. So-and-so. It was always, hey, Jen, guess what? You screwed up again.
Totally.
Come in and we can work out your bank registry. But Sandy was better than me. It seems that one of her checks she had written to Walmart on April 30th had come back with insufficient funds. Now, when she looks at the check, she sees that it's not a check that she wrote out. That's not her signature. So she goes through her checkbook and she discovers that a few other checks are missing too.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing she does is call her boyfriend James because, you know, he has access to her checks mm-hmm. and she thinks, well, maybe he just took a couple or whatever.
Right.
He denies taking the checks. It wasn't him. So she calls the police. When a policeman arrives at Sandy's apartment, she tells him that Sandy tells him that she lives alone and no one but her boyfriend had access to her place. Sandy comments that maybe someone could have taken her checkbook out of her bag while she was in class. The officer starts looking around her apartment and sees that a latch on her bedroom window has been broken. And when he comments on it, Sandy goes, oh yeah, I noticed that. I've already talked to my landlord about it, and I'm going to get one of those window bars, those lock bars,
mm-hmm.
and that's coming soon. So the officer starts to ask, you know, are you missing anything else besides these checks? And she's like, you know, nothing of importance. I don't think so. You know, not that I can tell. Well, little did Sandy know, she had a stalker.
Oh.
He had been coming into Sandy's apartment on at least 3 different occasions. And he was taking little things she didn't realize she was missing.
Yeah, it's those little things that go missing. And then you think, did I misplace that again?
He took underwear, personal pictures, CDs, and other, like, brushes. You know, things that you would just think you would misplace. Nothing of any value.
Right.
The National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Center, or NISVS, reports that about 1 in 6 women and 1 in 17 men have been stalked at some point in their lives. And while most women and men first experience being stalked as adults, approximately 21% of female victims and 13% of male victims reported being stalked as minors. Scary stuff here.
Really?
Nearly 54% of all female victims and 41% of male victims experienced stalking before the age of 25.
Mm.
And the overwhelming majority of stalkers are men. It's 4-1. So the CDC's survey shows that around 80% of stalking victims know their stalker in some way. But that doesn't mean a stalker is always the stereotypical jilted lover or jealous spouse, you know. Stalkers might not even have any romantic interest in the person that they're pursuing. Instead, they see them as a possession to control for their very own, you know.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Now, psychiatrists have developed several stalker profiles. The first one, the rejected stalker. This person was rejected in a relationship, and they perceive it as an insult. They feel wounded, and they are seeking vindication. The resentful stalker. These are self-righteous, self-pitying people who may threaten, but they are least likely to act upon it. Third is the intimacy-seeking stalker. They believe that they are loved and will be loved by the victim. Often they focus on someone of a higher social status. This person is usually mentally ill or delusional. There's the incompetent. Now, this person is socially backward. He doesn't understand the social rules involved in dating or romance, but he doesn't mean any harm whatsoever. Then lastly, there's the predator. This is about sexual gratification, control, and violence. The stalker doesn't necessarily know the victim. The victim may not know she's being stalked, but a predator plans their attack, rehearses it, and has a lot of sexual fantasies about it. I'm thinking Sandy Stalker was the last one, the predator. I could be wrong because I don't have a degree in psychology.
Well, I don't know enough about the story yet, but being that it's on our true crime podcast, I'm going to say the last one as well.
Mm-hmm. Back to the case here. At approximately 11:30 on May 6th, 2003, Sandy's neighbor, Herbie Ward, hears what he called a gut-wrenching scream and other calls for help. He ran outside in time to see what he thought was Sandy or someone getting into a 1980s red Dodge Shadow. Then the car backed out quickly from the apartment building's parking lot. So Herbie ran upstairs and knocked on Sandy's door and didn't get an answer. So he phoned the Maryville police. They arrived very quickly. And when they interviewed Herbie, Herbie was the one to give the police a description of the vehicle and told them, quote, "He didn't have no lights on or nothing. I don't know if he had a license plate," end of quote. Another neighbor tells police that they thought they heard screaming a bit earlier, but they couldn't be sure. Police check Sandy's apartment. The door is unlocked and her purse and keys are inside the apartment. They find the door is unlocked and her purse and keys are still inside. And her car is in the parking lot. But there's no sign of Sandy. On Wednesday, Sandy fails to show up for work, which she never does. She's too responsible of a person. Then she fails to show up for her final exam on Thursday. Police now fear that Sandy has been abducted. Police issue a BOLO, or be on the lookout, for a red Dodge Shadow. And the media quickly picks it up and everyone starts looking for Sandy. As with any investigation, police quickly start to research Sandy and retrace her steps in the days leading up to her neighbors hearing her scream. They found that on the morning of her disappearance, or abduction, kidnapping, she had taken a final exam. Then that afternoon, she had spoken with her boyfriend on the phone. And then around 9 p.m., she called a friend who lived about an hour and a half away. Now, of course, police immediately think to check out the boyfriend, right? And they do. They talked to James and discovered that he really didn't have anything to do with Sandy being missing. His alibis checked out. Everything. He was cleared. When Sandy's friends and family are asked if she had anybody that wanted to do her any harm, nobody could think of anything. I mean, they all commented on what a sweet and caring soul she was and how she wouldn't even kill a spider in her house. She would just take it outside. So police start looking into the only lead they have, the bounced check. They start going through Walmart's security tapes to see if they can find the person that used Sandy's check on April 30th. And sure enough, they see him. A tall, slender, white male, possibly in his late teens or early 20s. He had used Sandy's check to purchase some bike tires, a DVD player, and some camping items. They knew for sure this was the guy because the timestamp on the check was the same timestamp that was on the video. And being the smart police that they are, they run a check on all driver's licenses that have a Dodge Shadow registered to their name. And they find him. 20-year-old Aaron Lee Skeen. He had no criminal record, and he worked at the Lowe's in the same shopping area as the Walmart he wrote Sandy's check. On Friday, May 9th, 2003, police arrested Aaron Skeen as he was pulling into his parents' driveway in his red Dodge Shadow. Police immediately start questioning Aaron in hopes that Sandy is still alive. Aaron starts saying that he was walking past Sandy's apartment one day and he noticed that her window was open. So that piqued his interest, and he decided he wanted to take a look inside. It was almost an open invitation for him.
Clearly.
Yep. Like I said, she felt that he was leaving the window open because she wanted him to be there. So every time the window was open, he kept going back. And that's, of course, when he took all the checks and the personal items. Aaron Skeen goes on to describe what happened the night Sandy went missing. He confessed the whole thing. He said he saw her come home and he just needed a closer look. He wanted to look at her. So he climbed into her room and stood over her bed watching her sleep.
That's like one of my scariest things ever.
That somebody living inside the walls of your house and somebody staring at you sleeping are nightmares.
Just like fuel. Coming in because you're so vulnerable. You're not even awake. You are like, and I, you know, you'd wake up and not even realize, is this real? Is it not? It would take you seconds to grasp what was going on. And in that kind of situation, you know, that's forever.
Well, as a parent, I've woken up many times during the night by my kids staring at me. Like they get up out of bed and they just come to your side of bed and stare at you. And that scared the hell out of me. I couldn't imagine waking up and seeing someone I didn't know staring at me. It would.
Awful.
I'd shit my pants. Literally shit the bed. I would shit the bed. So after a few minutes of staring at her, I guess Sandy must have had a sense he was there because she opens her eyes and she sees him hovering over her. And then he started to attack her. Now, he came prepared. He brought a rape kit with him. He took out the duct tape and he wrapped several layers around Sandy's eyes. And then he used the duct tape to bind her hands behind her back, all the while pretending and telling her that he had had a gun. After Sandy was bound, Aaron Skeen began raping Sandy anally, vaginally, and orally. And once he was finished raping her, it kind of dawned on him that he would be leaving his DNA behind. So he thought for a second, and he turned on either the TV or radio. That's actually in one of the notes, TV or radio, like the court notes, the lawyer said, oh, TV or radio. Yeah. So no one could hear Sandy if she called for help or made a lot of noise. He then walked far to where he parked his car, drove it right up to Sandy's apartment where he backed it up, right in front of her door. He backed the car up to her door and he said he wanted it there so there'd be little chance of anyone seeing him leave with her.
Ugh.
Aaron Skeen then told Maryville police officers that he had taken her to a place in Blount County, Tennessee called Look Rock. Look Rock is located in the scenic Foothills Parkway. It's a natural observation ledge overlooking the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. When police asked if she was still alive, he stated that, well, she was when I left her. Last time I saw her, she was alive.
Really?
So the last place Skeen claimed to have seen Sandy was when she jumped out of his car on Foothills Parkway. Right now, they're praying that Sandy is still alive. They demand Skeen show them the place where Sandy jumped out of the car. So they drive him down to the Foothills Overlook. Skeen takes police to one of the Foothill Overlook areas and leads them into the woods. He claims that while walking with her, he realized that he'd left his car door open and goes back to close it. But once he turned his back, Sandy took off running and she escaped.
Please tell me she gets away. I would be so happy.
Then he points into the direction he claims that she ran off.
Oh, no.
When investigators walk further, they come to the edge of a cliff. And around 60, 65 feet down, they see the body of Sandy Jeffers.
Oh.
She still had duct tape wrapped around her eyes and her hands were still bound behind her back. Sandy never ran. Aaron Skeen pushed her over the cliff.
He lied?
He lied.
What's the point? Like, she's still... Oh my God, I hate... Never mind. Go ahead.
Aaron Skeen was charged with especially aggravated burglary, especially aggravated kidnapping, especially aggravated rape, 3 additional counts of burglary, and homicide. All in all, they got him for like 25 counts.
Good.
According to autopsy results, Sandy Jeffers suffered bodily injury as a result of anal and vaginal rapes. These injuries included anal lacerations and contusions of the uterine cervix.
Oh.
It was brutal. And it was determined that Sandy died as a result of numerous injuries sustained during the fall. Some of the injuries are broken ribs, fractured spine, broken pelvis, severe brain injuries, a punctured lung, kidney damage, and many contusions. Sadly, autopsy results show that Sandy Jeffers did not instantly die from her injuries. She suffered as she lay.
I mean, it's 60 feet, right? That's a lot, but it's also not that much. Like, I do...
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, I can see that somebody could survive that for a little bit.
But she's... Yeah, it's... heartbreaking. She laid there by herself for I don't know how many hours or days until she passed. While Skeen was in police custody, it was discovered that he had 3 separate websites, all created within 10 months of him raping and murdering Sandy Jeffers. On one of the pages, he wrote, quote, "Why I Hate My Life." And Skeen tells visitors on the site that ever since he was born, he had had a rough life. He claimed his life was harder than anybody else's. Here's a quote. "I've contemplated suicide many times. How can it get any worse? I can't seem to be happy, yet I'm not a bad person, and I know I don't deserve this."
Well, one of I kind of beg to differ there, pal.
Well, you could have chose. I know a lot of people that are depressed and have had crappy lives that don't murder people.
Exactly.
One of Skeen's ex-girlfriends said that Skeen would talk to her about his family problems, and her quote is, he had mentioned time and time again about being abused by someone in his family, and he never mentioned who. At first, Aaron's lawyer explored the possibility of using mental illness as a defense, since his client had been taking Lexapro for depression and had shown suicidal thoughts. But it was pretty obvious that since he, one, admitted that he did it, and two, admitted that he realized he had to get rid of the DNA evidence, right?
Yeah.
That the mental illness was totally out the door.
He knew what he was doing. That he had the wits about him to know that he was leaving DNA. So,
mm-hmm. And this was an easy case to try. I mean, not only did Aaron Skeen confess, but the semen samples that were taken from Sandy's bodies matched his DNA. There was also an abundance of physical evidence. And in the end, Aaron Skeen took a plea deal to avoid the death penalty.
Of course he did.
Even though he wouldn't get the death penalty, he still will die in prison. He was given life without parole, plus an extra 124 years to boot.
Good.
Now, to this day, Skeen has only stated his reasoning for killing Sandy Jeffers was to get rid of DNA evidence. He told Detective Sergeant Sharon Moores, quote, "What am I going to do with her? She had evidence in her." He still, to this day, has not said how he knew Sandy.
That was going to be my first question.
And she did not know him.
I wonder if he, like, when he broke into her place, if he saw pictures of her and kind of got infatuated with her that way. Because that was my next question. Like, how did they even know each other? How did he know her?
The only thing anybody can come up with is he did bank at the bank she was a teller at.
Oh, well, that's probably how then.
So maybe, yeah, that's what they think. But he's never said any other reason. And for all you ladies who are totally, totally desperate and want to date a rapist, kidnapper, murderer.
That'll never get out of jail.
He is on some prison inmate dating site.
Oh, nice.
And his profile, let me just read you a little bit about it.
Can't wait.
It's fun. This is his profile. "Over the years that I've been locked up, people I knew have drifted away. So I'm looking for new people to meet." Wonder why they drifted away, Aaron, huh? What do you think? "Prison is such a lonely place, and I'm so tired of being lonely. A little about me. Just because I'm in prison doesn't mean I'm an evil person. I was at the wrong place at the wrong time. I think you'll find that I'm very sweet for a guy. I have a kind heart and a good sense of humor. I'm 6 feet tall and 160 pounds. I love sports and music. I play guitar, piano, and I write my own music. I also have the moves like Jagger, but fortunately, I look way better than he does. Ha ha. I'm not too picky. I like pretty eyes and curves on a girl. Mostly, I like honesty and loyalty in a person. Race, religion, and age aren't too much of a factor. As long as you're not 80, I can't remember your name. LOL."
Oh, even buddy.
"Even if you would like to donate a few dollars to help me out, I don't mind. I'll admit it. I need all the help I can get. If you're interested, don't delay right today."
I'm going to take a hard pass on that there, pal.
He's not evil. I'm sorry.
He's a nice guy. Are you flipping kidding me? How can he even say that? How can he even say that?
Oh, no.
That he is not nice, I guarantee it.
Or mature.
And moves like Jagger. Yeah. Do they get to listen to like hit radio in jail, in prison? Do they?
I don't know.
I mean, how does he even know that sound was a thing?
I found this, actually, on the website called cutekillers.com.
Are you kidding me?
I actually didn't find the prison profile. But that alone should tell you. It's just, yeah. I don't.
There's no words. I don't.
Begging for money. Look what a horrible person Chris Watts is, and he still has all those women.
There's many of them. And you know, he's lonely in jail. How's that going to change when he finds somebody to write a letter to? You don't get to touch those people. You don't get to be with them intimately.
No?
I mean, that's part of your deal. You crossed that line. You made your bed, pal. You made your prison bed. Now you have to lay in it with the one blanket and a flat pillow and lice.
It's
and scabies.
Amazing.
And shower shoes for life.
Scabies. So anyway, I researched stalkers, and let me just give you a few little hints on stalkers, all right?
They're terrible.
The common stalker characteristics. Now, if you're dating somebody that has these traits, it doesn't mean they're a stalker, but these are everything that stalkers usually have in common. They're very jealous, very manipulative. They're narcissistic, deceptive. They're obsessive and compulsive. They fall instantly in love. Socially awkward or uncomfortable, which could be me at any given chance.
I was just thinking that's me. Okay.
Yeah. Needs to be in control.
Me.
Depends on others for a sense of self. Unable to cope with rejection. They have the sense of entitlement. Like, I took you out to dinner. You owe me. Or, you know. Yeah. They can't take no for an answer. And does not take responsibility for any of their own feelings or actions. So those are just things that you might want to put in the back of your mind if you're dealing with somebody. If you're dealing with a stalker, that is uncomfortable, but you have to do what you have to do to get out of it. So you have to, and if you don't want a stalker, this is what you have to do. Change your daily routine and habits constantly. And I'm really bad. I'm a creature of habit. Like if I go, I take the same route to the store. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. But see, he's like the worst kind of stalker because she didn't even know she had one.
No,
and you can't even protect yourself against that because you don't know that you even have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, if you do know, you're supposed to ask the offender to cease all contact. You're supposed to tell them.
Yeah, but they don't even get that. They don't. They operate on a whole different level mentally.
And also, even if you suspect you might have a stalker, tell friends and family and colleagues, tell people about it, warn them that you think something's going to happen. Don't forget to invest in security tools like locks and alarms, security cameras. Like there's always some kind of deal on Amazon for the Ring buzzer or a Ring security thing on. Oh, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, security devices.
You put on your doorbell?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Always. I strongly suggest getting one of those. Those help. I feel much safer now that we have ours.
They should sponsor us too.
They should. And also make sure you set strong passwords on all your accounts.
I don't do that.
Well, you need to.
I don't. But you're right.
And also, one thing, don't be ashamed that this is happening to you. Don't. It happens, you know, and never walk unaccompanied to your car.
Ugh.
You know, always have your phone fully charged.
That doesn't happen either. Let's be honest. If you're at work all day. That doesn't happen either.
But unless you are someplace that doesn't have an electrical outlet, I mean, you can get things charged. Whatever you do, don't ignore the issue. Don't pretend it's not happening.
Well, people, of course, you think that that's never going to happen to you, right? But then, like, that poor Sandy, she didn't even know she had one. So it's like, you can't even, like, why did he pick her? He must have literally gotten to her house, saw a picture of her, and, like, in his head, played that whole thing out. Because to me, he's a stalker, but I think first and foremost, he's a rapist. And so his part of his rape MO was finding somebody, stalking them, then raping them. But I think more like even, you know what I'm saying? Like I think.
Right. Well, I think it's true that he saw her at the bank and he probably did everything he could to make sure that he would get her as his teller.
Mm-hmm.
And he developed a little fantasy thing in his head.
Yeah, totally.
And easy to get her name because, you know, why they still do that, but they put the name plates up.
I hate that. I hate that.
It's
I hate having your
ridiculous.
Name out there.
You shouldn't do that. It should not happen in this day and age. And it's because it's so easy to track down people. It's so easy
and, you know,
to find people.
You and I have both worked in retail. And well, this I can't imagine having your name on a name tag now in this world with social media and everything. But you and I both worked in retail. And it would always scare me when a customer would come up and say, "Hey, Camille," and just in that weird voice, and it would throw you because it's like, you don't know me. Like, what are you doing? I don't know. And it was, I saw your name tag. Well, I don't like that. That was way before the internet and computers. And I can't imagine.
Oh, at the bookstore, I had somebody call and ask for me And then it was somebody that I had talked to earlier that day that I helped them with something, and I had didn't even remember who it was. Mm-hmm. Hey, remember you helped me find To Kill a Mockingbird or whatever. I mean, that...
Yeah. It, and most people are normal. Most people are healthy mentally.
It's true.
But, you know me. You know I'm a chicken. And you know that...
You just don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know other podcasts have said this, but you don't have to be nice anymore. I mean, there's being socially nice, you know, mm-hmm. like you have to get along, but you don't have to be overly nice. Mm-hmm. If you don't like who you're speaking with, you don't have to talk to them.
Yeah. Well, you just never know. You never know.
But if you are in trouble, there's a national hotline for, it's one called Victims Connect, and it's 1-855-4-VICTIM or 1-855-484-2846. There's also the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which is 1-800-799-7233. And also the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is 1-800-656-HOPE, which is 1-800-656-4673. Unfortunately, I didn't look up anything for our international folks, but hopefully I'll be able to find something and put it on the show notes yep. when this gets published.
Well, I would think probably each country has their own kind of thing, so
right,
it would be, you know, according to them. Well, that's
it's just
frightening,
heartbreaking,
and awful. It is, and that's like the things you never see coming. Like, oh
no, I mean, as this poor girl was only 25, and she was just at the point where her life was about mm-hmm. to explode,
yeah.
and just because some. Man.
You were going to say something else.
Because he... I just don't get it.
I don't get it either.
I mean, I've been obsessed with people before.
But
we've all driven by people's houses
before. But not in a violent tendency fantasy.
But I would never
You had fantasies
think,
that he was going to bring you roses and pizza and say, hey, let's go out. That's different, you know?
And I'm sure there's mental illness to play into all this. I'm sure. But... I just can't even get into thoughts what I need to say.
I got you. I understand. All right, Jen. So, you know, here you go. Here's a little story for you. You know, I had an incident when I was much, much younger, but you and I were still friends. And I was dating somebody, and he was always a little bizarre, which is okay. I like bizarre.
Odd is good.
Yes.
Odd is.
I like that.
Yeah.
I broke up with him, and he did not take it too well. So he started doing strange things. And this was before the internet and all that, of course, but he would,
thank God,
he would, and I'm not even quite sure how he did this. He was going to a university and he got on the university phone. So the phone call would call me and it said the university name. Well, I knew that he went there. So I would answer because I was like, hello. And then I would hear nothing. And then on the other end, I would hear a lady say, hello. And he was calling me and then calling his mom and then putting us both on the same phone to where we're both going, mm-hmm. hello, hello, whatever. And so when he called me and he's like, you know, I just got a disturbing phone call from my mom. She says you keep calling her. And I went crazy. I mean, I went apeshit, frankly, because, and that's part of the tormenting, I guess, that you start mm-hmm. to think you're crazy. And so it escalated from there. And yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember you called me once. I made you call the police. And I brought my upstairs neighbor with me. And the police wouldn't let the upstairs neighbor, being the man, anywhere close to you because they knew your situation. He would call me, too, and he would play creepy music, mm-hmm. like creepy music box music, and then hang up. Or he would even patch me through to you sometimes. Being who I am, I called his mom to tell her that he was stalking you and being a pain in the ass and doing all this bullshit. And she started screaming at me, saying how her son would never do such a thing and that I was a liar and you were a liar. And then come to find out later, he had been stalking other past girlfriends while he was even dating you.
Yeah. So leopard doesn't change his spots. Let's put it that way. But that
it
was, that was hard to get over, and it was hard to meet other people after that, and I'm still that way. Like, the minute I meet somebody, and it can be just a friend, but if there's some little inkling of, I don't know, just a behavior thing, I'm like, nope, we can't be friends. Mm-hmm. Just because, no. You know, I don't know, makes you more in tune, I guess, with people, sort of.
That was kind of a shame, because he was fun, like, when he was not being
very imaginative, very creative.
Oh yeah,
you know, he's very smart.
Yeah, just when he went off the deep end, it was scary.
Yeah, and but to him, he never did. Like he still to this day, I guarantee, would never.
Why? Because he blames other people, yeah. Right? Yep. Doesn't take one of the signs.
So, who knew, right?
Well, thank you for sharing.
Sure,
I know that was hard.
Was it?
But it was.
I just don't like. I don't like bringing that up in the sense that it's like, oof, like, ugh. It still gives me. And how many years has that been? 30 years ago? Is that right? Probably about, give or take,
around.
Mm-hmm. And I still will, like, every once in a while. I don't know. I will see somebody at the store that I think is him, and I'm like, oh, like I like, ugh, my heart drops, and it's not. I've never ran into him, thank God. But
thank the good Lord.
Still, so yeah. There you have
it. Scary stuff.
And, you know,
scary
stuff. People like Sandy didn't. I was very fortunate.
She didn't even get a chance.
That's what
to
I mean.
Complain
she didn't.
About a stalker.
Yep.
I mean, she just.
True.
It's just heart wrenching.
It is heart wrenching.
But thinking an open window is an invitation.
But they do. They put that in their head. They put little. It's crazy. Like that. You wrote me the cease and desist letter on yellow paper, and you know that I'm right. Like, it's just stupid things that they make up in their head. So that was a good story, Jen. It's very sad. And I really like that you gave people some references. That's not right. Phone numbers to reach out
phone
to.
Numbers in case.
Not reference. What would you call that? I can't even think. See, I can't think either.
We got the dumbs today.
We do have the dumbs. Anyway, I appreciate that. And
dumb and dumber.
Yeah. I get to be dumb. All right, Jen, do we have any promos this week?
Yeah, we do have a promo. This week, it's from our friend Lindsay at the podcast Stolen From Me.
Good.
Check her out.
Good to know. I'll check it out.
But not in a stalking way.
No,
don't do it as a stalking way.
Until then, Jen, and this never had more relevance than I think we need to change our tagline. Remember, lock your doors.
And your windows.
There you go. And until later, bye-bye.
Love ya. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Fortese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at WeTalkOfDreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at OurTrueCrimePodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya.
All right, Jen, I hear you got a case for us.
Do I? Is it my turn? I thought you were doing it.
Oh, you want me to do mine first? I don't
know. No.
Oh, because usually we go you, me.
That was sarcasm.
Oh. Oh, I didn't catch it. I'm tired. Yeah. So we also had daylight savings time. Is it saving?
This is my favorite daylight savings time.
Gain an hour.
Are we?
So to me.
Yeah. It used to always happen around my birthday, which it still kind of does, but it used to be closer to my birthday. And I would think that was the Mother Nature's way of giving me a birthday present, an extra hour of sleep.
Oh, Lord. Okay, girl.
All right.
Okay, you'll take it away.
On May 5th, 2003, 5 days before Fanny. that's not her name.
What's her name?
Sandy.
Sandy.
Not Fanny.
Sandy Squirrel.
Fanny means a totally different thing in the UK. When we go to the UK, we're going to have to watch our fannies. No.
Mm-hmm.
The National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey reports that about 1 in 6 women and 1 in 17 men have been stalked at some point in their
stalked?
Lives. Stalked. I'm going to say that again. Yeah, I've stalked. Haven't you stalked?
Stalked. Yeah, I stalked at Walmart when I worked there.
Stalked. Stalked. All right. And that scared the hell out of me. I couldn't imagine waking up and seeing someone I didn't know staring at me. It would...
Awful.
I'd shit my pants. Sorry. Literally shit the bed. I would shit the bed. Sorry, people. I don't mean to...
Well, I did.
But I would. Not, I'm just being honest here.
A little segue. Have you ever had one of those dreams? What is it? The paralysis dream? Mm-hmm. You know? Well,
yep.
In St. Louis, you're going to know this. We had the Southside Rapist, and this was going on, and I lived with my mom right smack dab in the middle of this. And this one mm-hmm. night, our air conditioner went out. It was like in the late summer. It was so brutally hot. You had to have a window open. This house was built in 1949, so brick, 4 sides. I mean, it could hold mm-hmm. air conditioning and heat like nobody's business. And I was sound asleep, and I had the window cracked, but I was a big chicken, because I still am. And I had a paralysis dream that a guy broke into the window with a brown mask over his face. And it was so real, and I could not wake up.
Aaron Skeen told Maryville police officers that he had taken her to a place in Blount. Is it B-L-O-U-N-T?
Blount.
Blount.
Blount. Like Roy Blount.
Is it?
Roy Blount. He's our...
Is that how you spell
that's
it?
That's how... Yep. That's how he spells it.
Okay. Then that's what I'm going to use. And I'm sure somebody's going to... tell me that I'm saying it wrong, because that's what everybody loves to do, but that's okay. I know I pronounce things wrong, and I know I'm not perfect.
But you try, and that's what counts.
It's part of my charm. There's common characteristics in a stalker. Stalker. They like to put things up on shelves. Common.
I was like, really? Oh, Lord. Okay.
Welcome to my true crime podcast, Stolen From Me. Every week we will cover a different case, from the notorious Ian Huntley to the gruesome Ed Gein. You can follow me for more episodes and news on my Twitter page, at Stolen From Me Pod. I got into true crime from an early age. I was around 8 years old at the time, and at school we had to write to someone famous. Everybody decided to write to the Queen, but I didn't want to do that. So I decided I was going to write to the Cray twins. This didn't go down well, but it did escalate in my fascination of true crime. Thank you for being a part of my podcast. Please leave a 5-star review, like and subscribe, and see you in the next episode.